Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. With the help of Genome Alberta, genetic researchers are taking on two major issues for Alberta industry. One is the devastating infestation of Alberta's forests by mountain pine beetle. The other is oil sands production. By sequencing the DNA of microbes, fungi, bugs, and trees, these scientists will give us new insights into how these biological systems work, and how we might harness them to improve oil sands production or reduce potential damage from pests. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. In scientific terms, it's really not all that long since the double helix was discovered or that the human genome was mapped. TV cop shows have familiarized the public with DNA and its usefulness in solving crimes. Today, research into any of the life sciences routinely involves some aspect of genomics, and the results of that research are changing the way we approach all kinds of social and industrial problems, including oil sands production. Dr. Gijs van Rooyen is the Chief Scientific Officer for Genome Alberta.
Genomics really is an extension to what we call in high school biology. And so now with genomics, we have acquired the tools to take a closer look at organisms and species and are able to identify the genetic information that basically makes us us.
So what sorts of projects now do you see Genome Alberta involved in?
Well, genomics can be applied to a whole range of different sectors, and so it can be applied to the sectors of human health, environment, agriculture, forestry, and so any species that has DNA, any revolutions or any discoveries in genomics can be applied to these different sectors. And Genome Alberta covers most of those, most if not all of those sectors, except for fisheries.
How do you actually go about doing genomics research?
So we are an organization that facilitates genomics research at institutions that are set up to do such research. And so most of the research is done at the academic institutions in this province, and some of the research is done at the colleges as well. And so you need a research infrastructure that has been built over years to do this. But for genomics in general, if you look at genomics as the catchphrase for everything omics, genomics typically involved the DNA sequencing, which involves large pieces of equipment, which are becoming smaller and smaller all the time, to generate the sequence information. It also involves equipment that can analyze protein structures, and this would be equipment such as mass spectrometers or NMR, sort of nuclear magnetic resonance pieces of equipment. And it also involves the identification of metabolites, which we are referring to as metabolomics. And again, it's chemical instruments that are necessary to analyze these different metabolites into biological systems.
Well, when you watch these TV shows like CSI, everything always now comes down to finding the DNA of the culprit or whatever, and it seems to happen instantaneously. Is it really that way in the research world?
Well, in the research world, it does take a little bit longer to identify DNA signatures of particular species or culprits or suspects. But huge advances are being made in this particular area. I mean, to give you an example, when the Human Genome Project was first proposed in 1990, they proposed that it would take 15 years and would cost $5 billion to sequence a whole human genome. And the current costs today for the same human genome are probably less than $1 million today. And the cost for sequencing that would go down dramatically, that's what they propose, over the next couple of years to less than $10,000 per human genome. And that sequence can then be obtained in a week's time as opposed to the 10 to 15 years that it originally took to sequence the first human genome sequence. So it's not as fast as an episode of CSI, but we're making great progress in making this faster, quicker, and cheaper.
One of the initiatives that you've just started has to do with metagenomics. What is metagenomics?
Metagenomics is a general word for environmental genomics, which means is that you take an environmental sample and you extract the DNA from that environmental sample. And so typically that DNA comes from microorganisms that live in that particular environment. So rather than isolating the individual microorganisms themselves, you now extract the DNA in one big pile of a whole community of organisms that live in these environments, and then you use computing methods or bioinformatics to piece all those sequence all that sequence information together, and then from that you can identify if you have sufficient information, you can identify whole microorganisms.
Now, the project that you're just starting on deals with oil sands development. What can DNA have to do with oil sands?
Well, there is microorganisms can be found in all environments, including extreme environments. And so the oil sands, they also harbor microorganisms that have lived there for hundreds of thousands of years and that have made the oil sands what they are today, degrading oil into the current structures of oil sands. And so we're quite interested in finding out which microorganisms live down there and what pathways are encoded within those microorganisms that have transformed the oil into oil sands. And so we hope that the information that we gather from such a project will help inform us maybe on developing biological means of extracting oil much more efficiently, for instance, by reducing the viscosity as a result of enzymatic processes, or even using existing microorganisms to maybe to break down some of the toxic byproducts that come from energy extraction, and to see whether we can use biological processes to do some remediation of the sites that have been affected by the exploitation.
Well, even if you do find the DNA pathways and you identify microorganisms that you can use, the oil sands have developed over millions of years. So how can you speed up that process?
Well, that is a really good question. It's true that we do not have millions of years to wait for this to happen, but by understanding what the microbial communities are made of, there are ways of enhancing the microbial communities to do what you would like them to do. For instance, there is a process which is called MEOR, microbial enhanced oil recovery, where you're feeding the microorganisms down below so they have sufficient food and they start working much more actively than they have been working in the past. In addition, I mean, you could think about maybe warming up the environment a little bit to wake the microorganisms up and to get them to carry out those enzymatic processes much more efficiently. So those are some of the ways that can be employed. But I think the first key is to understand what these microbial communities are made up of. And then once we understand what these microbial communities are made up of, then we can look at whether there are ways of manipulating those microbial communities to do what we need them to do.
How long do you think it would take to find out some of this stuff?
With the advances that have recently have been made in technology for especially to sequence DNA information, to obtain the sequence information is fairly routine at this point and can be done very rapidly. And so we anticipate that within 6 months, for instance, we have a good idea of which microbial communities reside in the oil sands based on the sequence information. But it's going to take quite a bit more time to analyze all that information, to really to piece that together, and then hopefully to use that information to come up with some practical applications or come up with some hypothesis on how we can use that information.
The metagenomics that you're doing with oil sands, what other applications might it have?
Well, as mentioned, so we believe that the understanding of the microbial communities, they can enhance in enhancing the extraction of the oil by making the oil more viscous, for instance, which also means is that hopefully that this will reduce the amount of water that's going to be required to extract the oil sands. Also, what we believe that there may be opportunities to manipulate the microbial communities that currently resides in the tailing ponds, which is one of the environmental issues that comes as part of the exploitation of the resource. And that is by manipulating those microbial communities in the tailing ponds, maybe to manipulate them so that they produce less methane or greenhouse gases, and at the same time, where we manipulate the microbial communities so they would allow the settling of the fines in the tailing ponds to occur much quicker, allowing for the recycling of the water in the tailing ponds to occur much more efficiently.
Thank you very much, Heis.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Heis van Rooyen, Chief Scientific Officer for Genome Alberta. They say it takes two to tango, but in the case of the mountain pine beetle that's threatening western forests, that little dance number requires a threesome. There's the beetle, the pine tree, of course, and the third dance partner is the fungus that shadows the beetle wherever it moves. Uncovering the genomic relationship between those three factors is at the heart of a new project funded by Genome Alberta. Lead investigator is Dr. Janice Cook, an expert in forest genomics at the University of Alberta, and project manager is plant physiologist Matthew Bryman.
So the project I'm involved in is called the Mountain Pine Beetle Genomics Project. So what we're going to do is take a look at something that's really becoming near and dear to a lot of Albertans' hearts, and that's the recent invasion of a small grain of rice-sized beetle from BC into Alberta that's affecting the pine forests there. We're going to take a look at it in association with the fungus that it brings along and see how it works. The three of them actually work together to bring down a lot of the pine forests that are in Alberta too.
Now, the funding for this project comes from Genome Alberta. What is Genome Alberta interested in?
Well, what Genome Alberta, I think, wants to do is bring the genomics and genetics tools that are here to bear on a question of really ecological significance in Alberta, something novel and something new, and get a marriage of the genetics and the genomics tools with the life sciences that are here in Alberta.
Janice, you're the architect of this project. What is it that you were looking at?
This is a really interesting, complex biological issue. The association of these mountain pine beetles, their fungal associates, with pine trees, not even just one pine species, but multiple pine species, presents such a complex biological question. So my interest in this complex biological question was really, could we use genomics technology, genomics tools, to bring novel insight into the interactions of these three partners in this ecological question? And so last year when we were developing this project, we decided that we could bring genomics technology to bear to bring new insight into this ecological, economically important issue.
What's different about your approach as opposed to what's gone on elsewhere?
Research into mountain pine beetle has been going on for many decades. Much of that research has been carried out on a shoestring budget. And so as a consequence, oftentimes that research is focused on one aspect of this complex biological interaction. People have looked at the mountain pine beetle. They've looked at the tree's response to mountain pine beetle. In some cases, they've even looked at the fungi associated with the beetle that ultimately result in the demise of the tree. But very rarely have researchers had the technology the means, the financial means, to look at all three of these interacting partners in a comprehensive way. And so that's really, I think, the novel aspect of our project, that with the new technologies that are available, we are able to look simultaneously at these three interacting partners.
What will that give you then, taking this approach?
I think it's a more holistic picture of how the beetle is interacting with the tree, what the tree is offering to the beetle. And the beetle is not only being hosted by the tree is the hotel for the beetle, but the beetle is also eating the tree. The tree is the beetle's buffet. And so what we can do then is look at the functional relationships between the beetle and the tree. So the tree's defense response against the beetle in various climates, and the beetle's response to these defense responses. And all of this is being tied together by these pesky little fungi, these fungi that do the tree in, but service the beetle. They think that the fungi provides nutrition to the beetle, makes a more palatable environment within the tree. We can look at those interactions, and instead of treating the beetle and the fungi and the tree as black boxes, we can use genomic technologies, the gene sequences of these creatures, to really ask questions about function and interactions. We can look inside them. We can open up that black box and say, what's going on inside that beetle? How is it really responding?
And what would be the importance of getting that information then? What's it going to tell you as a manager?
So right now, decisions are being made by the province using decision support tools, which are essentially mathematical models that tell them something about the risk being posed to Alberta's forests by these beetles. And while these models have served a certain purpose, they're not parameterized using data about how beetles are functioning here in Alberta. And they don't really include a lot of data, for example, about the fungi. They really don't even include much data about the trees. And so what we're hoping to do is provide insight into how these trees are responding, how the beetles are moving through the province, how these populations may differ from north to south, for example, and provide this really Mercedes-level data to provincial managers that are using these models to help them better estimate risk.
Is the Alberta forest then different from other areas that have had heavy infestations of pine beetles, say BC or down in the States?
Well, in fact, our forests really are unique. If we look at our western neighbor in BC, for example, their forests obtain a lot more annual precipitation than Alberta forests. We live in a very dry environment, a very harsh environment. These trees are under chronic stress. They're adapted to this stress, but they present a very different buffet to these incoming beetles than do trees in BC. And so one of the chief questions that we want to address is how are tree defenses altered in Alberta's harsh environment? Does that affect the success of beetle attack? And so rather than simply looking at the exterior of the tree, we can ask what kind of defense response does it mount by looking at gene expression patterns.
Matt, what work has been done so far on this project?
Well, to begin with, there's been a lot of sampling that's been going on to take a look at the beetles, the fungi that are there, and the trees across a whole range of areas, some from our western neighbor in BC, some of the early areas where the beetle has actually been able to cross the Rockies and enter Alberta, as well as from some of the areas where it actually has not reached as well. Take a look at some of the things that are going on as a way to see how the beetles might be able to progress from area to area to area.
Well, once you collect those samples, and I bet there's like thousands of them, what happens
so
to them then? How do you get the genomic information out of that?
Well, what we actually need to do is extract the DNA from them. So that'll involve, for example, with the beetles, taking portions of the beetle tissue, grinding it up, and extracting the DNA from it. As well, we need to take the fungi and culture them as well so we can obtain individual representations of the fungi that are there. We'll do the same type of genomic extractions from them, and the same from the trees. We want to get as much information out of all three as we possibly can.
Janice, if you're looking at the DNA and the gene information that's coming from the trees and the beetles and the fungi, and you're also looking at the differences between the Alberta forest and BC and these other places, what is that information going to tell you? Are you looking at adaptation and evolution?
We're really interested in understanding adaptation. So we know that over the past 100 years since Europeans have settled in the western provinces, that there's been a marked march north of these mountain pine beetles. Mountain pine beetle outbreaks have been occurring for many, 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 many years, millennia. We know that there was a vast outbreak in southern BC in the 20s, for example. We know that there were outbreaks in the 50s. There were outbreaks in the 80s. This outbreak is occurring at more northern reaches than ever before. And so there are people who really feel that this is a sign of having had milder winters over the past decade or two decades. But the question also remains, are these beetles becoming more adapted to northern climates? Are they able to complete their life cycles more quickly, for example? And so this becomes a question of selective pressure. Are we seeing a selection for beetles that perhaps are more capable of surviving in Canada's north? And so using genomics tools, we have for the first time now the ability to ask those kinds of questions. And so we're embarking now on molecular marker development using gene sequences. That's a major push in our present project. And so we feel by the end of the project, we will have a suite of molecular markers that can be used to test the hypothesis, are beetles, in fact, becoming more adapted to Canada's north?
Matt, who all's involved in this project?
Well, we've been lucky in that we've been able to bring quite a diverse group to bear on this complex issue. And what it's done is it's married a lot of disciplines in science that really aren't used a lot. And so when you talk about that, you think of things like we're bringing ecology and a lot of field work and chemical ecology into genetics and genomics tools. We're bringing mathematicians and mathematical models, and we're integrating that with a lot of the biological sciences and all the groups that I just said. So these are a lot of groups that typically may not talk to one another on any given day, and the ability to bring them together and do this work is one of the things that makes it so novel.
What's ahead over the next few months?
We need to continue our sampling and make sure that we get as much information as we can, especially during these winter periods, to see how the beetles are actually overwintering here in Alberta. Then when we're able to actually go in and get a lot of the DNA, we need to start our analysis on it and, as Janice had been mentioning, see where we can go with this molecular marker development. We still have a long way to go, and we're just in the infancy of the project.
Janice, have you found out anything so far?
The major discovery that we've made so far is this idea that these beetles are, in fact, surviving in areas where we might not have expected. But on the other hand, we've seen that small environmental influences, even just a small cold snap in November, can have a marked effect on the populations out there. So I think by having our field crews out on a weekly basis over this past year has really given us on-the-ground insight into this beetle that has allowed us to refine our hypotheses and develop very specific questions that now we can address with these genomic tools. If we had not had that time on the ground, I think that our questions that we're now addressing in the lab using experimental approaches may have been more naive.
What do you want the end result to be?
When all is said and done with the data and the analyses that we hope to do over the next 2 to 4 years, I think we have two major outcomes that if we do have those outcomes come to fruition, I will be really happy. The first is that with the modeling team that we have associated with the project, we hope to have new models put in place that are able to assess mountain pine beetle risk here in Alberta to a much better degree of confidence than we presently have. The models that we have now have served a purpose, but we really strongly believe that models that are parameterized with the data come from the Genomics Project will really be Ferraris. We really feel that they will help forest managers really assess the risk to a much greater degree of confidence than we can do today. The second will be a suite of molecular markers, gene-based molecular markers, that will really allow us to ask novel questions about adaptation. We're going to be able to get at that in this present round of funding with this present project, but we're really setting up for a future, a really bright future, to look at questions about real-time adaptation, and that's really exciting.
Matt?
If I can add one thing to what Janice is saying, we're taking a problem that with the mountain pine beetle that's been known for a while, but really with these models that are being developed, what I think we're hoping also to put into place is strategies that could potentially be applied to any other type of pest that might come along. Once these things are already in place, it's a lot easier to adapt them and to grow them so that they can work in a wide variety of situations. So it's really a forward-thinking approach that's being brought to bear here.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Janice.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Janice Cook, an assistant professor in biological sciences at the University of Alberta and lead investigator in the Genome Alberta Mountain Pine Beetle Genomics Project. I also spoke with project manager Matthew Bryman. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during the program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Genome Alberta, the Alberta Conservation Association, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Research Council, Alberta Ingenuity, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, ICOR, the Informatic Circle of Research Excellence, the University of Lethbridge, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.